Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Metropolitan Ave on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host for the next 40 minutes, DJ Lady DM. If you're tuning in for the first time, Metropolitan Ave brings you the best independent musical talent, most of whom are discovered performing in non-traditional venues here in New York City. If you miss out on our live broadcast tonight, you'll find us archived on the heritageradionetwork.org website. For those of you on the go, pick us up as a podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Tonight's in-studio musical guest is Sean McMahon, also known as Workman Song. Workman Song will be performing live during the second half of the show. But first, joining us live tonight in studio is Keith Darcy. Did I say that right?
Yeah, it's Darcy.
Darcy.
It's close enough.
How'd I get that wrong? Yeah. He handles creative licensing and catalog acquisition at Songs Music Publishing. Mr. Darcy has a long history in the music industry, handling song licensing for film and TV at Universal Music Publishing, EMI Publishing, and Sony BMG. Prior to that, he worked as a music producer in advertising. So hi, Keith, and welcome to Metropolitan Ave.
Hi.
Great to have you here.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of time in the making, but we finally got you down. How did you get your start in the music business?
When you sent me the sort of questions to prep with, I looked at this and I said, 3 to 4 sentences, how am I going to do this? So I'm going to give you kind of what I feel are the key things that led me to where I am now. So I went to college in Rhode Island, to the University of Rhode Island. They have a radio station, WRIU, and they had a really wide broadcast range, and not a lot of people at the school paid much attention to what was going on at the radio station. So pretty much the entire 5 years of my 4-year bachelor degree program, I spent at the radio station listening to records. And I didn't really think that that would have anything to do with what I did in later life. It didn't seem like something that would lead to a career. But I can really pin what I've been able to achieve in my career to having spent so much time at the radio station, wasting time between classes and during classes in certain instances, just listening to records and kind of learning as many styles of music as I could. First job that I had was at a recording studio in Manhattan called JSM, which is what's called a jingle studio, commercial music underscore company. And they basically make original 30-second recordings for the background of TV ads. And most of what I did there, you know, besides the normal duties of kind of just general studio, I won't say studio rat because I know that that's like not the polite term, but I was essentially a studio rat, running the patch bay, cleaning tape decks, doing stuff like that. But I would make cassette needle drop tapes for the composers to help them to get their heads around certain styles of music that they were being asked to compose for ads. And this was at a time when a lot of advertising agencies were, you know, pretty much only doing original music. Licensed music was not really even in the picture at this time. This was in 1994, 95. And that slowly started to change, and the reason that I was able to kind of make the transition from sort of nighttime shift studio person to music producer at an advertising agency was, one, I had a really big record collection, so they didn't have to spend any money and on like building up their own library, and I could do needle drops in any style of music that you could give me. And two, I just really naturally gravitated towards spending hours and hours compiling music for people. And all of the creatives and art directors and copywriters would come to me and say, here's what we're trying to do. Here's the style of music. Here's the piece of music that we think we want to use, but we know we can't afford. So what else is there that sounds like this? And can you help us direct an original music composer to do something similar? So from there, in 1999, I got a job at EMI Publishing. Basically, my career since then has been digging through existing catalogs of music and finding songs to place in film, television, ads, video games, promos, trailers, application, like apps, just anywhere where you can find a reason to sort of present selections of music and get somebody to potentially, hopefully, license them.
That's awesome. What was your first big break?
I think my first big break, meaning like what was the first license that I was really proud of having put
on the other side of the business, like how do you gain fame and, you know, fortune in the spotlight doing what you do, which is basically helping other artists and musicians?
Well, yeah, you know what? That is definitely a major part of it. Like placing tracks for people can really make a major difference in what they're going to do for the next 6 months or to a year. You know, a small, you know, kind of an independent band who gets a license in kind of a TV ad campaign can make the kind of money that means that they don't have to do whatever day job it is that they do for a while. There's lots of that at Songs, but when I was working at EMI, which is really the longest stretch of my career, my excitement was finding interesting bands from the 60s and 70s that I really loved and finding placements for them. And my favorite one, even though I kind of got there second in a way, was there's a track by a band called The Creation, a British mod band, mid-60s. They had a song on the soundtrack to the movie Rushmore called Makin' Time. And I always loved it because that's kind of been my thing for a while, is like 60s and 70s psychedelic music and mod and what's called freak beat. And I was able to place Makin' Time in a spot for Sony. And in doing so, I got to spend a lot of time on the phone with Shel Talmy, who was the guy that produced the track. And I found out a lot of interesting things about what it was like to be an American in London in the mid-60s producing tracks for these amazing bands. And not many people kind of realize, but a lot of the real key movers and shakers in London in the late 60s were actually American expatriates, like Joe Boyd, for example, that produced the Nick Drake records, Shel Talmy, who did, you know, amazing records with The Creation, The Action. And, like, there was this kind of undercurrent of these American producers going over there and kind of making history.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to focus on the hot topic today, which is music publishing. But okay. I'd love to have you back down to talk about your knowledge of music. My God.
You got to rein me in.
Yeah, so you're at Songs Publishing. I know that Songs prides itself on offering musicians like an entire array of new services that were once offered exclusively by management. Can you explain what Songs Publishing does, what it is, what it does, and how it differs from the traditional publishing house?
Well, in a way, it's no different than any traditional publisher in that we manage the rights of songwriters. It's much smaller. It's much more focused. And perhaps boutique would be the term that I would use. We've got a very, very carefully selected group of writers that we work with. And yet, what we do for them is no different than what a major publisher would do. We just have more people dedicated to the kinds of things that writers want and need. Networking them for co-writes, getting them placements in film and television, helping them to make sure that their collections are being handled properly, that internationally we're pulling in performance money for them, monitoring things like YouTube and YouTube advertising as in the cases where it benefits writers. The publishing company really doesn't operate that differently than a major publisher, other than that, like I said, we have a fairly large staff for a fairly small catalog of songs. We have about 30 employees and about 5,000 songs. And if you were to compare that to one of the major publishers like Universal or Sony ATV, for example, the catalog is enormous. And the number of employees is scaled up from there. But I think that a company like Sony ATV probably has 500 employees globally. Mm-hmm. But they manage a catalog of well over 2 million copyrights. So they have a lot more to try to find. They have a lot more music to try to find opportunities for than we do. So we feel like we can really kind of help the writers more day to day. We spend a lot more time with them, I think.
Do you have a niche or genre? What are some of the musicians that you're working with?
The well-known writers that Songs publishes are Diplo, Pharrell Williams. We just signed The Weeknd. Canadian, amazing, sort of deep, weird R&B, amazing stuff that sort of in the same world as Frank Ocean, maybe. We publish a couple of key writers for Owl City. We publish Connor Oberst, who's Bright Eyes. We publish Nelly. We publish Sleigh Bells. And like a bunch of kind of amazing bands that aren't necessarily household names, but are really, you know, exciting to us and hopefully to the rest of the world.
Great. And how do you generate revenue for these musicians and artists?
Well, I mean, the basic thing that we do for them is we try to have as open a conversation as we can with them about what they want to do and where they want their music to be. And, you know, we actually sort of, in the process of, you know, considering a new signing, we'll interview somebody about what it is that they hope to achieve. Is it co-writes with major pop writers that we might help network them to? Is it they really have an affinity for maybe writing to specific briefs for film and TV, or they want to make as much money as possible with their copyrights to fuel their touring and their live, you know, career, which is very expensive, as a lot of bands know? Then we'll simply, you know, find them as many opportunities as we can to license their songs. We've got a fairly large, well, we've got a very large film and TV staff compared to the size catalog that we have. And, you know, in some cases, it's just sort of making sure that writers have everything they need to, you know, to be successful.
What are some of the things they need? Or, for instance, what are you looking for when you're looking for new talent?
Well, we're looking for something that excites us, something that we feel like we can make a difference with, like that we personally can have a positive effect on what this writer is trying to achieve. We have a certain group of writers who are kind of first call major pop writers, like Brian Lee, for example, who co-wrote the new Icona Pop single. We have writers that are primarily working on their own projects as a touring band. And then we have writers that are just completely interested in whatever we can throw their way. We do a monthly writers forum where we get the writers together and we kind of give them a general assignment from the world of film and TV, and we kind of talk to them about how that world works, and then 6 weeks later we get together and listen to the demos that they've done, and then we give them as open a critique as possible to help them to understand what it's going to take to get their songs into the kind of shape where they could potentially land a major film trailer or a major you know, ad campaign, if that's something that they're shooting for. So just trying to figure out what it is that they want to do.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of independent musicians that listen to the show, and how would they get, you know, some your attention or songs publishing attention or any major publishing house on their...
Well, I mean, I'm really easy to reach. It's just kdarcy at songspub.com, and I'll listen to anything. And, you know, so primarily what I do is we work on film and television, but I also, in a smaller aspect, I'm in charge of catalog acquisition, which is different than A&R in that I'm looking to sign writers who have fixed catalogs of music from the past, mm-hmm. who aren't active writers. So I've signed about 5 deals with people who were at their peak as songwriters in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. That being said, if I hear somebody that I think has tremendous a tremendous quality that I think I can find lots of interesting placements for in the world of licensing, I can certainly, you know, I can certainly make a proposition inside the company.
And on the other side, what are some of the basic terms or... what should musicians look out for when they're signing a deal with a big publishing house?
Well, I think that you need to sit down with the person that you're talking to there and say, this is where I am in my career. This is the kind of thing that I'm interested in now. I want to be able to tour. I want to get together with writers that I admire and hopefully kind of have successful co-writing sessions. I really focus my writing on film and TV. That's something that I want to shoot for. So can you help me with that? Or, you know, we've got this band and we've got a tremendous amount of traction and we're making money. We just want to make sure that globally it's being monitored properly, that we're getting sync opportunities in Brazil and sync opportunities in Norway and sync opportunities in Australia. We've got a pretty robust network of sub-publishers that we work with that we've very carefully selected for their ability to service the kind of the needs and wants of the writers that we have.
And I know there's a lot of new digital tools that actually help publishing houses monitor what songs are being played where and actually enable them to collect royalties.
Yeah, it's funny. There are lots of, it's getting a lot easier to figure out what's happening, especially like YouTube. You can see how many people have viewed your video. One of the things that's really important to us right now is to figure out how money is being made in those spaces and figure out what's fair for our writers. That's something that the company really focuses on, is what's happening on YouTube. When somebody covers your song and that song happens to get to the point where lots of people want to hear it and it gets a lot of streams, and advertising space is being sold. Advertising is being sold against that video. We want to make sure we understand not, as much as is humanly possible about how that works so that we can be as effective as possible in making sure our writers are getting what they are due.
So when someone covers a song, that's called mechanical rights?
Well, there are several ways that a copyright can make money. There's synchronization licensing, which is the money that you get when somebody places a song in a film or TV scene. That could be a cover, or it could be the original recording of a song. Mechanical income really relates to when people are buying, either downloading or subscription streaming like Spotify or Moog, for example. And then performance income, which is when a song that you've written is performed by a band in a public space or is played on the radio or is played on the jukebox at a club or, you know, a bar. So those are kind of like the three basic ways that a copyright makes money.
Okay, great. And so we're actually... the show is hosted by a radio station that has roots with food. So I definitely get to ask a few food questions.
Cool.
Where do folks here in the industry in New York go to wine and dine and have their little power lunches and business meetings?
Well, there's a McDonald's on 20... I'm kidding. So while the music industry isn't as centralized as it once was, I mean, there was a time in the history of the music industry where most of the important publishing companies and even record labels were in the same kind of couple block radius, like the Brill Building era or the Tin Pan Alley days. But I think these days, most of the major companies are pretty spread out. And the one place that kind of came to mind as the place where business lunches take place is the Red Eye Grill, which is up across from Carnegie Hall. That just seems to be the place where if somebody wants to go to lunch, that'll be where you'll see somebody else at another table that you recognize that's in the biz. But and I could also tell you what my favorite places are.
Go for it.
They have nothing to do with... So I'll give you my top three of the minute, I guess. There's a fabulous Thai restaurant up on 52nd called Pure Thai Kitchen, which I'll go to lunch at when I have advertising agency folks from that section of town that I want to get together with. And it's very casual. The food is amazing. And there's a place called Maysville on 26th Street, which is kind of 26th Street for some reason is really booming when it comes to food because of Hill Country, I think. That kind of kicked off a trend of really interesting restaurants popping up in that area. There's an amazing Korean restaurant on 26th between 5th and 6th called Hanjan. There's Maysville. There's a beautiful bar called the Flatiron Room that's there. And then the third place is just a place that I kind of discovered at random. I was having lunch with a friend of mine in the West Village called Parma. It's got a beautiful garden full of flowers, and it's spectacular Italian food. And it's kind of a... it's a known entity, but it's a place that's been there for long enough that people, I think, have kind of... it's not in the sort of heat of the trend, but the food is amazing and just a lovely place.
And what's your favorite menu item?
My favorite menu item?
Or menu items for, like, your power lunches.
Oh, well, if I really want to take somebody somewhere and, like, impress them with food, Toto Ramen. It's also on 52nd. It's right around the corner from Pure Thai Kitchen. But it's just this tiny little maybe like 20 seat ramen kitchen. It's boiling hot in there all the time, and it's like you get there and you sign up on a little like sign up sheet, and you wait like 45 minutes to an hour, and you get in and you have this amazing bowl of ramen. That would be where I would take somebody that I was trying to impress, I guess.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming down to the show, Keith.
And thank you for having me. This has been really exciting. I hope we haven't gone over our time.
No, I'm watching the time.
Let's got definitely it all do this under again. Control.
Yeah, I would definitely love to. I think next time you get to bring some music.
Because there's a lot more to say. Oh, yeah, I would love to bring records. Yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with our in-studio musical guest, Workman Song.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to Metropolitan Ave. I'm your host, DJ Lady DM. Thanks for keeping your digital dial tuned to Brooklyn. Who's in the studio with us tonight? Please introduce yourselves, your name and your instrument.
My name's Sean McMahon. I'm playing guitar and the lead vocal.
I'm Brandon Lopez. I'm playing upright bass.
My name's Dave Gibson, and I'm playing percussion and drums, sort of.
I'm Moses Etter. I'm going to play calabash, cajon, and percussion.
Eric Meyer, I'll be playing banjo.
I'd love to let our audience hear why I asked you to come on the show. Could you please give us a song?
Sure. One, two.
I'll cut your throat if you squeeze mine. I'll shake your hand. Butterflies will fly out from our union, and they'll see what we have shown. I ain't asking about violations or how to stop. I'm bored to death, but now I'm not, so go refresh your mind on your broken soul. This country lanes stretched in order, then the execution that removed your head. No diamond rainbow road. This is crust and mold that makes you think and do as told. But you're so well prepared that you're destitute of all the words that could help the truth to blossom out from within you. We'd do anything to be near you, but you can't see what you're being shown. Swooping down and you're out of your mind, cause it's running on time and the fuel's eating up and there's a clog in the line. So you tap the glass on your broken watch and hope that what you are is all that you are, and it may not be enough, but it could keep the vomit down. Yeah, the going could get rough, but you can't keep this damn varmint down. Yeah, I'll cut your
What was the name of that track?
That was called Varmint. Varmint.
I'm going to try to hold back with flattery today, but
oh, no, you're crap.
I know you're pretty active in the local music scene here in Bushwick, Sean. What other bands and projects are you involved with?
So to my right here, Eric Meyer, who's playing banjo later. I play in a band called Bird Courage with him. And the guy with the funny accent, which is New Zealand, to be clear, that's Dave Gibson. Sometimes here and there I play bass and guitar with them in their band called Streets Laredo.
You're the infamous Streets Laredo. I've heard a lot about you.
I've been talking about
you're the person I've been emailing. Yeah, you should.
Dave, get on top of it. Come on.
Anyone else you want to mention?
Hypothetically speaking, we have this group. Raise your hand if you're in the Bushwick community chorus. Yeah. We have this group. We're not going to perform this song in here. There'd be too many of us, but about 10 of us, including Caitlin Watkins, who's another great songwriter in the area. I cram them into my apartment and force feed them these vocal arrangements, and then we perform spirituals and psychedelic songs, you know.
My singing choir, can I join you?
Really?
Yes.
What's your voice part?
I'm a mezzo soprano.
Yes. Absolutely.
Love the show. How does the environment here out here in Brooklyn temper your music, and where are you from? Let's talk about roots a bit.
Yes, yeah, so I'm originally from Western Massachusetts, near Northampton, Springfield area. Stained is from Springfield. Killswitch Engage is from Springfield. And Jay Mask is currently resides in Northampton. A great band called And the Kids lives there now. Thurston Moore currently resides there. I dropped those names on purpose because it does give you a sense for what was going on there. Like, Northampton is an artsy town, quite rootsy. It's kind of like the Portland of, you know,
the Northeast.
Massachusetts. I mean, Burlington too, so I can only say Massachusetts. Springfield is interesting because there's just like a metal scene and a blues scene that's been there for a long time. It's a great place. I came here to Brooklyn about 2 years ago. God knows why. Like, no one, you know, everyone's just like, oh, I'm going to go to New York. And that's what I did. Wanderlust and wanting to go into its slipstream. So how does it affect me?
Yeah, the environment here, like the people and places you bumped into, how does it temper your music, or does it just bring out the roots more?
Sure. It's very stimulating. I mean, obviously I'm surrounded. I met Moses and Brandon in Boston when I lived there, but I met these two guys, Dave and Eric, in New York. I'm very impressionable. These musicians around me have face-planted me with their brilliance and hard work ethic, and I've always wanted to be in a place that would challenge me to rise to potential. And I guess also an important thing too is, you know, you have such a massive group of people, and I think it's a challenge for a songwriter and a singer, or like a poet, to, you know, want to address people, you know. And I don't, you know, in Western Mass, which it's a beautiful place but smaller, and I wanted to learn more about people and address them and dialogue with them.
All right, so let's continue. You just give me an excellent segue, so let's continue that dialogue with another track.
Sure.
Thanks.
This one's called No It's Not. You guys ready? Just about? All right, one, two, one, two. I spill my colors onto the floor like a newborn babe unto the earth. I thought that it was right
chest. But no, it's not. No, it's not. I watched your fingers dancing on my guitar. I watched the empires rise and fall. I watched his daggers rain down from the clouds. I watched your fingers dancing on my guitar. I spill my colors onto the floor like a newborn babe unto the earth. I thought that it was righteous, but no, it's not. No, it's not. From our tree, I give you wisdom under the sun. I give you something that we could not see. I give you you, and to me you. Spill my colors onto the floor like a newborn babe unto the earth. I thought that it was righteous, but no, it's not. No, it's not. My footprints swimming away. I laughed at preachers with nothing to say. I laughed with all the dead men till they were all out of breath. I laughed at my body. Never coming true. And I thought it was strange that me instead is you. I thought that oceans only waved when I looked their way. And I thought that Jesus Christ was dead, but I touched his wounds and I saw his.
What's the name again of that track?
That was called No, It's Not.
You just got out of the studio.
Correct.
A couple times recently.
Yeah.
So what was happening?
So first instance, not too long ago, I think last week officially, I got out of the studio with Bird Courage. And we finished our first full length. Definitely the first one I've done since I joined the band. And that's really exciting. We're having the release for that on Friday at Cameo Gallery.
I'll be there.
Yep. Please. And then this past week I was in New Jersey. I actually can't specify where exactly. It's kind of secret, but I was in the woods of New Jersey in a place called The Hangar, recording my first Workman song full length.
Do you guys have any upcoming shows?
Yeah, so this full group Workman song will be playing at Jalopy Theater in Red Hook on September 5th. I'll also be playing at the Counting Room in Williamsburg for a concert series called Little Notes, and that'll be September 17th. And I'm playing with my friends Star Rover. I'll say it again. August 30th, Cameo Gallery. Bird Courage release show is happening.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that too, because Bird Courage was our first. They actually came down and recorded our pilot with us, and I'm going to sneak you guys back in the lineup. And it's kind of painful to sit here and not ask Eric to sing. It's pretty painful for me, but I love the etiquette here. There's a couple of bands in here, and everybody's being really polite and focusing on Sean.
It's really sweet of you guys. It's like my birthday party or something.
Are there any restaurants or local food spots here in Bushwick that serve as like a little gathering space for your crew?
Yeah. I hesitate to give this one away, but our high-powered business meetings go down at a place called Tina's. Tina serves excellent coffee, excellent meatloaf sandwiches, excellent tuna melts. Brandon, what do you like there?
Bacon, egg, and cheese.
So it sounds like you guys are up early, or do they serve breakfast all day?
No, this is not... You're in Bushwick. This is not a place where people really wake up, like, until, you know...
I'm in Bushwick. So. It's part of New York, isn't it? It's a part of Brooklyn?
I don't know. I mean...
I definitely feel a little... I just got over to this neighborhood a couple, like, days ago, literally. It does feel like it's in its own time zone.
Yes, yeah,
compared to the rest of New York, besides the trucks driving by at all hours of night, but
I like to call it Bushwick Standard Time. It's about an hour and a half late.
Amen.
Normal Eastern Standard Time.
Thanks, Dave.
I concur, Dave. Well said.
Awesome. And where can people find you guys online? I can't believe we have an extra 10 minutes to the show and we're already out of time. But where can people find you online?
I would be at workmansong.com.
I saw... Tell me a little bit about the video.
The funny update video? No.
This animal that appears, a dog?
Yeah, it's a pug and a Jack Russell crossbreed called a Jug. Her name's Ting. I don't know. I had a little time on my hands, and I realized I had a lot coming up that I wanted to tell some people about, and I was alone in the apartment. And I had a video camera, so I started talking to myself with that thing on and decided to cut in some footage of the dog. Because, you know, I love my dog. She's beautiful.
You'll have to bring Ting down next time.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Why not?
All right.
All right, so that's all the time we have. I want to say thanks again to my guest, Keith Darcy, head of creative licensing and catalog acquisition at Songs Publishing. And our in-studio guests, Dave Gibson on drums, Moses Etter on percussion, Brandon Lopez on contrabass, and Sean McMahon, lead vocals, a.k.a. Workman Song, and Joe for rocking and engineering today's show. You'll find tonight's broadcast of Metropolitan Ave and many other great shows archived on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also visit Heritage Radio Network on iTunes and Stitcher. See you next week, and thanks for listening. We have a song to take us out.
And all I've lost, what should I have retained? How
I'm not much better off this time around. Look at all I've done. Look at all that pain. Look at me, oh, look at everything. Oh, so of mine. I hear all the voices telling me it'll always be the same. Crooked ways they push my body through. Crooked voices, crooked aims. Shame, shame, shame. Tell me a sweet story now, and I'll surely pay the price with my pain, yeah, yeah. With my pain, yeah, yeah, yeah. And pain, pain, pain. You and my everlasting love are gonna bleed together now. Write my name, yeah, yeah. My name, yeah, yeah. Run my name, yeah, 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 yeah. Mm-hmm. I know you've waited so long way to find a secret you can make me stumble on. But I stumble so well, I can make it look like dancing. Always leaving things to chance and no one else. That's the dream we're dreaming in our heads. It's so dense and it's so strange. But that's the way our bleeding wounds do heal. We'll come out perfect through the pain. Shame, shame, shame. Tell me your sweet story now, and I'll surely pay the price with my pain, yeah, yeah. With my pain, yeah, yeah. My everlasting love are gonna bleed together now. Write my name, yeah, yeah. My name, yeah, yeah. Write my name, yeah, 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 yeah. Try to keep you in a stack of books and lies. But now I see what I now see. See, looking through my eyes at everything. Have a look around. Heaven and the stars will tumble down. Learn to die the night rose. Beauty in the dream that looks like me lives within me. I'm a clue. Shame, shame, shame. Tell me your sweet story now, and I'll surely pay the price with my pain. Story now, and I'll surely pay the price with my pain, yeah, yeah, with my pain, yeah, yeah, yeah. Pain, 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 you and I.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.